This morning you've heard a bit of the history about Memorial Day and some of the reasons behind the original celebrations and decorations that were given to those who had died in battle. People are grateful. People are to be reminded of different things. And so Memorial Day just kind of naturally inclines us toward reflection. And so we want to take a little bit of time for that today. Hope that you will benefit from that. When we think about the sacrifices of many heroes, the freedoms that we enjoy as a result of their sacrifice, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom to bear arms, many other freedoms, because Americans have chosen to give their lives to preserve those freedoms for us. Are we grateful? Well, mostly. I think sometimes we forget. Sometimes we forget to be grateful. The word memorial comes from our word memory. What is memory? Well, that's kind of an interesting topic. Memory is the mental storing and recall of information. More precisely, it's the process in which information is encoded, stored, and retrieved. Hopefully retrieved, not always retrieved. Scientists don't quite know how memory works, but they know it requires a chemical change of some kind in our brains, that any number of the brain's 1 trillion neurons have to, you know, experience this chemical change. By the way, I've noticed that a few of my neurons are not working very well lately. Have you? Fortunately, you have, you know, a trillion of these to deal with. So if a few are not working, you still have something left to work with. And hopefully we've got more left to work with than we've lost. Some of our memories are intentionally programmed. We call this learning. And learning can be in formal ways at school. Some of our graduates have just learned a lot and could impress us with the things that they've learned. Right, Megan? Yeah, okay. And there's other ways of learning, too, just through the average, everyday experience of life. We're learning constantly, and information is being stored away in our memory banks, not always so successfully retrieved, but always put in there. And we hope that we can recall it when the time comes that we need it. Many memories require no conscious effort at all because something happened. Maybe it was a result of some momentous event, some experience in our lives somehow fastened itself to our brain. You know, it just big. And so it just fastened in there. The bigger the event, the more it sticks. Also, the more traumatic the event, the more it's going to stick. However, if it becomes too traumatic, then the other thing happens is you kind of block that out. I don't want that memory, and I'm going to pretend it's not there. And your mind can play some tricks on you so that even though it's there, it would take a lot of, you know, deliberate effort to bring it back out again. It's just somehow removed from conscious thought. So that's memory. Well, what is a memorial? A memorial is anything that preserves the memory or knowledge of an individual or an event. And man's always wanted to do this. He's always wanted to remember things. So you go way back to the cave dwellers. What did they do? They painted a picture of them killing a mastodon together, you know, because this was a big thing for them. And so they wanted to preserve that for the succeeding generations after them. Throughout history, man has marked the graves of his loved ones, often with stones. Rulers of Egypt and Babylonia and Assyria and Persia and Greece and Rome have left their memorials in things like pyramids or obelisks or statues or slabs or other stone forms. And why stone? Why is stone chosen? Well, because of its greater permanence. And so it sticks around a lot longer. As long as it doesn't get broken or crushed, the memory is still alive to the degree that the memorial is there. The pyramids in Egypt, how old? They're over 5,000 years old. People still know they somehow represent the history of the pharaohs that were behind that. The verb form of the Bible word for memorial is pretty interesting. The verb form means to pierce or to prick or to penetrate or somehow to prod the memory stored away so that it's not forgotten. It's not left behind. And that's kind of interesting. So that this memory is triggered by some powerful emotional response. And so God has created memorials, and there are many of them. Important things that God wants us to remember. So the Bible encourages different types of memorials. The people of the Old Testament had their annual feasts or festivals. One of the chief of those is Passover, so that they would remember that sometime God delivered his people from bondage in Egypt, and every year you commemorate that. So we never forget what God did. And we've just celebrated the Lord's Supper. Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper so that we would never forget, we would always be mindful of the sacrifice that he made on our behalf and also his resurrection from the grave. So memorials are milestones in history, sometimes indicating turning points in the course of events. And, you know, later generations would go back to a particular day like D-Day, and they would say, on this day, things changed dramatically and the war turned. Because of the great sacrifice of a great number of people, this day is significant, and gratitude comes out as the emotional response. Memorials aid man's memory in preserving what he should cherish most, and that's their point, is so that the things that we should not forget are ever reminded in our minds. So we need to stop. We need to remember the greatest lessons that we could ever learn, the highest values we could ever know. You know, as a child, and maybe some of the kids here today, you know, Memorial Day is just a three-day weekend. That's all it is. It's just, even as a young man, I remember thinking, great, you know, I got 3 days off. We can just really relax and enjoy a little bit more than we might on any other weekend. But as you get older, you start gaining a little bit of wisdom about this, don't you? And you start realizing, you know, this is not just a three-day weekend. This really has some depth and meaning behind it. Well, why do we need such things? Well, memories leak. And maybe we realize that more and more as time goes along. It's so easy to forget the things that matter, the things that we need to remember because they're most important things in life. And that's why the Lord has us assemble and share in the Lord's Supper so often. Some people think, isn't that routine? Isn't that become humdrum? Doesn't that just become so repetitious? Not for me. I don't know if it is for you. But every time I am reminded of Jesus' sacrifice, it brings new strength and vitality to my relationship with him. And if we don't celebrate the Lord's Supper, we forget who we are. We forget why we're living for Jesus. And, you know, we drift. Memories leak. This morning, we're going to read a Bible story, and I want to encourage you to get a Bible out. If you have your own Bible with you, get it out. If not, pick one out of the seat in front of you there. And we're going to look at a story about the Jews crossing the Jordan River. They spent 40 years in the wilderness. And the reason they spent 40 years in the wilderness is because the first time they got there, they refused to go. They didn't want to go into the promised land. And so God said, okay, we're going to just deal with this whole generation. Next generation will get a second chance. The Israelites had left Egypt 40 years before because of the great and awesome hand of God. God had moved and brought the 10 plagues upon the land of Egypt. And the 10th plague, finally, Pharaoh says, okay, you can go. Just get out of here. And he let the people go. And they were starting their way across, going towards the promised land, when Pharaoh changed his mind. And about the third day, you know, he's like, I don't think I did the right thing here. I'm going to chase him down. I'm going to bring him back. And so he meets up with them as they're right at the border of the Red Sea. And what does God do? He performs another miracle. He parts the Red Sea. The whole group of them, maybe 2 million people, cross through on dry ground to the other side. And when Pharaoh and his army tried to follow after them, then the waters came back in and drowned them. And a great victory is won. The people are delivered, and they go on to the promised land, presumably to inhabit, to take possession of the promised land. But that generation failed the test. And so now, 40 years later, we're back, and it's time for them to go into the promised land once again. So get your Bible out, or find one there in the seat in front of you, and let's go down to Joshua chapter 3. We're going to read it section by section. It's a pretty short chapter. But this is a very interesting and powerful story. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out for Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it. You are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the ark. Do not go near it. So in the Ark of the Covenant is the presence of God. This is how they picture it. The presence of God, and they would follow the ark wherever they needed to go. And the presence of God would lead them into the promised land. And the ark itself assured them of God's presence in their lives. Verse 5, Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Joshua said to the priests, take up the Ark of the Covenant, pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and they went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. And the Ark of the Covenant symbolized the presence of God, but it also symbolized the power of God. And as the ark was carried into the Jordan River, the water stopped flowing and piled up in a heap upstream. Just kept backing up and backing up. So as the waters flowed past the Ark of the Covenant, you know, down below it, they ended up on dry ground. It was an amazing thing. I wish we could have seen it. Hollywood has tried to reproduce it, so we could never come up with the special effects that would truly represent what happened there. It's an amazing miracle that happened. Verse 9, Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. That's a lot of zites. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe, and as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So God's promising through his presence and his power to drive out the inhabitants of the promised land. All 12 tribes would have a special place there. So he says, something's good's going to happen here. God's going to do something here. Get 12 men, one from each tribe. Have them ready, because they've got a special assignment coming. Verse 14. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. And yet as soon as the priest who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, which, while the water flowing down to the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, was completely cut off. So everything that was flowing stopped and kept building up. Things beneath the Ark of the Covenant kept on going until there was nothing. You know, it just dried up all the way down to the Salt Sea. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho, and the priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. So under Joshua's leadership, the people obeyed God's command for the priest to carry the Ark of the Covenant into the river, right into the middle of the river. And as they walked into the water, which was perhaps waist deep, everything stopped. Water dissipated from them. It piled up behind them, away 16 miles away. At harvest time, this is at flood stage. So you've been out to a river when it's flooding. You know what happens. It's overflowing its banks and it's going everywhere that's not normally going. And now all this water is being piled up more and more and more and more, and it just coming up as a giant wall of water behind them, pushing back like we dammed up a river, like they did to the Colorado, or they've done to so many other rivers, and TVA lakes, you know. This huge lake is forming 16 miles back upstream, while all of these people, all of their goats and sheep, you know, the whole 9 yards has to cross the Jordan River. It took a while. And the water just keeps piling up. And the men at the end picked up the 12 stones that God had designated for them. He said, I want these 12 men representing the 12 tribes to each go into the river and grab a giant rock, and we're going to do something with it. I won't tell you until later what it is. And they all pick up the biggest rock they could carry, put it up on their shoulders, and got up on the other side, the other bank. The Ark of the Covenant was carried up under the bank, and the waters returned into the Jordan River and continued flowing downstream. To help them remember this miracle that God performed at the Jordan River, God told them to take the 12 stones from the riverbed and to build a memorial, a monument to God. Now, most monuments honor men, don't they? In our nation's capital, we have the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial. We have all these different things to honor a man of significance in our nation's history. We have hundreds of statues and plaques commemorating what some man did. They're man-centered. But this memorial at a place called Gilgal was God-centered. It was about being true to God and remembering what God had done. Let's skip down in order to save a little time to chapter 4. Let's go down to verse 19. Verse 19, chapter 4. Now we see what happened after they've carried this out. They've got these 12 stones, the Ark of the Covenant's out of the river. They're continuing on their journey on up to a place called Gilgal. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and they camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. It's about 3 miles away. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. What do these stones mean? And it reminds me when we took our grandkids to the Lincoln Memorial and to the Washington Monument, and they were all ages, you know, and they said, what's this about? What's this building for? Why did they build this? Who is this guy? You know, all the questions start coming out. And it was so fun to be able to tell them who Abraham Lincoln was and who George Washington was and why we honor them and what the difference they've made for our country and for our world. And this would be the question that would naturally come out. Daddy, 12 rocks about. Why are they built like this? And so they answered the question. And God said, here's the answer. Here's of these stones being built in this way. Number one, to show the whole world how powerful God is, to how powerful the hand of the Lord is. The whole world can see that. And secondly, I want to motivate you, God's saying, to trust me, to fear me, to honor me, to respect me, to always obey me. And these stones are to remind you of these two things. Now, the memorial of Gilgal served to reinforce their faith and the faith of every succeeding generation. 40 years before, their parents had made a deadly mistake and said, no, we're not going to do this. We're too afraid of the inhabitants of the land. The giants that lived there, and then they went back into the wilderness and all died there. Now their children are here. They have the opportunity to do it right, to make things right. Now they could put their trust in God to lead them and to be with them as they took possession of the promised land. And that is what they did. The place where the 12-stone altar was built was called Gilgal, which literally means circle. New name, new kind of place. And maybe they put the stones in a circular kind of altar. We don't know exactly. They made this altar to God. They made this monument to God. They sacrificed animals there in order to seal this moment, to seal this event and what God had done for them. Notice what Gilgal would mean to these Israelites as their first foothold in Canaan. And they're going into the promised land. Many other places are going to be taken possession of. This is the first place they could claim as their own. It's like, you know, put the flag in the ground. We got this place. We claim this place for God. Gilgal was their first place of worship. They lifted up prayers and sacrifices of thanksgiving. It was also here, as you read on to the text, that they circumcised all the males before they began their military operations. And it was also at Gilgal that they held the Passover again. So we're kind of combining things. Here God visits Joshua and reaffirms his mission, we could read later. And it became their base camp from which their military operations started out, where they carried out, you know, place after place, city after city that they would take possession of. And Gilgal continued to be a place of worship. What is sad, what I really don't like to tell you, is it didn't always honor God. Eventually people said, we could honor other gods here too. Here's this great place of worship, this great shrine, this great altars built here, and has so much meaning. You know, why don't we go ahead and bring Baal in here? Why don't we go ahead and bring in Asherah? Why don't we go ahead and bring Molech? And you know, some of the other gods and goddesses that they, people that they had conquered, that God said, do not worship other gods. And eventually at Gilgal, they started worshiping these other gods there as well. That's the way people are. Memorials don't always achieve their purpose. A memorial ought to call out the very best that we have to offer. But eventually Gilgal failed to do that. I wonder, is there a threat that Memorial Day will not call out our best? It'll just be another holiday. It'll just be another time off. It'll just be another family time or friend time or time to do nothing. When actually the memorial is to be calling forth the best we absolutely have to offer. Or we say what God has done with the things we have that we enjoy at the cost of someone else's life. It ought to speak volumes to us what is important. And so on this Memorial Day, I hope that we will appreciate the sacrifices that others have made and not trivialize Memorial Day as just another holiday. You know, it's just another day off. We only want to capture the values that have been preserved at great cost to others. You know, there was a reason somebody gave their life. There was a reason that hundreds of thousands have given their lives. There were values that they were dying for. So don't take their sacrifice for granted. Recapture the priorities that they had if you need to. And on this Memorial Day, I hope that we will be inspired to live our lives with the same kind of devotion and same kind of courage. You know, we live pretty humdrum lives sometimes. We're just kind of making it, you know, just kind of barely passing through. But there are people that have risen to an occasion, who have given the very best, even at their own life's expense. Can you be inspired by that? I can be. And we also need to remember that we, on this day, should trust God. God to guide us, to watch over us, because there is a daily spiritual battle that we're in. And sometimes we forget that. And we need to have our God, His presence, His power, His promises in our lives as well. I want to end with this. Memorials help us remember what's truly important in life. They help us to remember the things worth dying for. Because that's really what it comes down to. That soldier, you know, that's out there, he's in battle, and, you know, a moment comes, am I going to run away? You know, am I going to stay back here away from the front, or am I going to run into, you know, where I'm likely going to get killed? Am I going to be part of that? He has to make a decision. She has to think, you know, am I willing to give my life for this? And I've already made that decision, but now it comes right down to the moment, you know, where you have to do this. What are the things worth dying for? What do these include? And so I started thinking, you know, what's on my list? What would I die for? What would you die for? Well, first of all, I thought, what I would not die for, I would not die for my house, would you? I would not die to keep my house. It's not that important to me. I would not die for my paycheck. It's not that important to me, although I still want to get paid. But I would not die for that. You know, I can live some other way. You know, that I don't have to have that paycheck or any paycheck. God would still take care of me. I would not die for any of my possessions as much as I might enjoy them. Would you? There's nothing that I have that I would die for in the way of possessions. I would not die for the entertainment I enjoy. I would not die for the pleasures that we pursue, good, bad, or you know, indifferent. You know, none of those things would I die for, would you? No. But what would I die for? Well, I would die for freedom. And people have. That we could live as free men and women, that we would be free to worship however we choose to worship, to be free to speak our opinions, free to pursue our dreams, free even to serve others if that's what we choose to do. And as Christians, that's what we choose. I am free to do that, and I would die for your freedom so that you could continue doing that. I would die for love, wouldn't you? I would die for love for my family, love for my friends, even for people I haven't met yet, you know, that I know God loves. I would die for someone else, I think, that you know, Jesus said no greater love than this, that a man would lay down his life for someone else. I would die for that. I would die for faith in Jesus. That's worth dying for, because Jesus died for me. He's the only one who could save me from my sins, you know, and if I'm going to hold on to one person, it's going to be Jesus. And if somebody comes up and threatens me, if somebody says, you know, deny Jesus or you're going to lose your life or we're going to do this or that, I would die for my faith in Christ. That's my desire. That's my plan. And I don't know what I would do until I got to that moment. I can't guarantee all of that. But that's something worth dying for, isn't it? And then I think a final thing to die for is the mission of Jesus. You know, that Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. And he was willing to die so that mission could be accomplished. Should we not be willing to die so that mission could be accomplished? He led the way. He showed us what that means. Do you like this list, which you can't even see? Freedom, love, faith in Jesus, the mission of Jesus. Would you die for that scuba diver? I would not. Here we go. Let's see all the lists there, please. Freedom, love, faith in Jesus, and the mission of Jesus. Would you add anything? Well, maybe. I'm not sure I'd agree. That's all I could think of, what I would die for. You might say it a little differently. You might add an item or two. I don't know. But let me say one final thing. This just really makes a lot of sense to me. That if these are the things we would die for, they must be the very things we live for. We don't live for our possessions. We don't live for our pleasures. We don't live for our paychecks, although sometimes it feels like it. This is what we live for as well. And we have to make this decision. What do I be willing to die for? What am I willing to live for? I'm going to close with a video this morning. It'd be a time for you to just reflect, remember, and think about what God has given each of us through the sacrifices of so many others. So just take a moment, watch the video if you want, reflect, pray, whatever you want to spend this time. Let's take about 3 minutes together to watch.